Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to First Things First. I am Jenna Wolf. That is Chris Carter, the Hall of Famer, and that is Nick Wright. It is Thursday.
Oh my God,
we're shaking hands.
Yeah, Jenna Wolf, I didn't want to leave you out. You sometimes feel left out.
He
likes to get a little party. You're jealous of
that's a little. That's
oh, no. That I'm not jealous of. Whatever y'all doing with your fingers,
okay.
Three times a day, not interested.
Way past where that needed to go. Big show on the docket today. Patriots might be the best team in the AFC. There's an outlet that thinks so. Cowboys are on the verge of locking up the NFC East, but we start with a random Lakers-Spurs game in early December. Because when LeBron James is as good as he was last night, how could you not start there? LeBron scored 20 of his 42 points in the fourth quarter to help the Lakers win their fourth straight game, 121-113. San Antonio led by 8 in the fourth, mind you, until LeBron realized he is the greatest basketball player on earth. Went 7 of 8 from the field in the final 9.5 minutes, including 3 buckets from deep. Again, Lakers beat the Spurs. Here's LeBron James after the game.
We were down 8, and they've had our number, up until this point. They beat us the first 2 games and beat us on our home floor. We've been playing so well at home. We want to try to continue that. But, once I got in, it was just a matter of me just trying to make plays and see what happened.
LeBron, is it fair to say maybe some of the comments that or questions that were asked about your workload, maybe you took that a little personally?
Not for what? I'm past the personal stage. Yeah, I can do whatever. I can have a huge workload. I can have a not so huge workload. It doesn't matter for me. But what's most important is seeing my teammates make huge shots in the fourth quarter. Jay Hart out of rhythm all game because of foul trouble. He makes 2 huge threes in the fourth quarter. Zoe makes a huge three on the left wing. Kuz making the plays down the stretch as well. That's what's most important to me. I can care less about the narrative about me that. It doesn't matter. I'm stapled in this game.
You get the feeling you could ask LeBron about any minute over the course of any of the fourth quarters, and he'll say, oh, I'll tell you where everyone was, who shot what, how much they shot, who was winning at the time. I mean, he has that whole game mapped out as a game plan. How impressive was LeBron's performance last night, Nick, especially what he did in the fourth quarter?
Yeah, the fourth quarter was spectacular. I mean, he checked in with 10 minutes left in the fourth earlier than he typically would, earlier than Luke Walton has been wanting him to, because Brandon Ingram turned his ankle in the first quarter of this game, never came back. Their rotation was screwed up from Jump Street because they had that foul trouble that LeBron was talking about. Josh Hart got 3 fouls seemingly in the span of 90 seconds, so he was out of the rotation. Kuz got a few fouls early, so you had to go Svi Mykhailiuk was getting minutes, and this is how all of a sudden you're down 91-83 with 10 minutes left in the game. And then LeBron, orchestrating everything, leads them to to 38 points in the last 10 minutes of this game, a comfortable win, and not only the shots he's hitting from deep, but the shots that he laid out there, that he assists.
Which are more important.
Right, which he says are more important. The shots that he assists or that he got the hockey assists on, where he claps the defense on him, kicks it out, and then there's another pass after that. Every basket that was scored once LeBron came into this game had his imprint on. And so what you saw last night was a Lakers team, they needed to beat the Spurs. Not just because the Spurs right now have the second worst record in the West. Not just because the Lakers need to protect home court because they haven't been a good road team. But they play the Spurs for a fourth and final time day after tomorrow. You can't risk getting swept by San Antonio in a down year by San Antonio 4-0. This was a team that, as LeBron said, had had their number. This game was slipping away from them. And then LeBron was spectacular in that fourth quarter.
So not only San Antonio, that they had a chance to go 3-0. That's not the message you want to send. And as you mentioned, San Antonio's not even having a good year. But it's the style for which they were getting ready to go down 2-0. Because the other two games were fairly close, too. Then at the end, San Antonio, sticking to what they're doing, understanding how to close out games, and a little more veteran experience, that's how they won those other two games. The Lakers could have won those two games.
Yep.
I mean, but in seeing this, LeBron sees, man, about halfway through the fourth quarter, I need to be able to do something. And for Laker fans, I know you guys consider yourself big basketball fans, but this is what LeBron James does. If you put guys on his team who can make shots, because we've had quarters where LeBron scores 20 points, but his ability to be able to dominate the quarter, not only with his scoring, but with his passing, that's what makes him unique. But to see the confidence of these young players be able to grow in critical situations, in big matchups, like against San Antonio, that part right there was I was glad to see. And now back to what Magic Johnson and Kobe Bryant.
Yeah.
Hey, man. Y'all need to leave that dude alone. Now, both of y'all got tremendous basketball pedigrees, but LeBron James, if you decide to take the ball out of his hands, you are deciding, I'm getting ready to allow him to play where he's not playing at his strength. LeBron needs the ball. I mean, I'm all about development, Lonzo, God bless him, all right? I'm all about that. But if you're LeBron, with his skill level now, he is best suited to be your point guard, your point forward. He needs to be able to dominate the ball because he will allow the other players to continue to develop. The more he has the ball, I believe the better they'll develop.
Well, and as LeBron's got a four-year contract in L.A., as he ages, he's not going to age into a small ball center. He's going to age into a point guard. He's going to age into a guy who is even more of a pass-first player. I think as he ages, his assist numbers will go up as his scoring goes down. And he's always going to find the open man. That's right in the fourth quarter. Going into the fourth quarter, the Lakers were 7 of 28 from 3. In the fourth quarter, they were 7 of 11 from 3. LeBron hadn't hit a 3 himself in the fourth quarter. And it was funny, if you watch the game, I know it was very, very late last night. The first 3 he made, the first 3 he took in the fourth quarter, he follows the shot because he thinks it's off. He runs in. He's surprised he made it. That thing gave him the confidence to shoot a 36-footer a few minutes later. That gave them a lead, and then a critical one from the left wing a few minutes after that. Like, his shot started to fall, and his teammates' shots started to fall.
So that's interesting, because I saw last night's game differently. What I saw last night was a team that tried for three quarters to be able to play without leaning on LeBron. And then in the fourth quarter, LeBron said, well, I got to go out and let me just win this. So let me just turn it on. Like, I can turn it off and turn it on when I need it, which is an incredible skill to have, which most players can't do. But I just wonder if the team is leaning a little too heavily on LeBron to do that, to bail them out, if you will, when they need him.
As you can see in LeBron's interview, and you're right, the first three parts of this game, they were doing what they normally do. It's LeBron is going to allow the game to find him. Very seldom ever. Now, we've seen in some epic playoff games, and Nick and I have been very, very fortunate to see, okay, we want to watch LeBron the first 6 minutes. In a few of those playoff games, he decides, I'm going in as LeBron the scorer. But typically, LeBron, 95% of the time, 98% of the time, he's going to come in as a facilitator and let the game come to him. And that's to the benefit of these young players. Because let me tell you, LeBron could start the first quarter the way he started that fourth quarter. So it's part of them growing as a team, and that's still part of who LeBron. Man, I walked out of the Garden last year with LeBron, yeah, allowing his teammates.
CeCe mumbling on his breath. This guy tell me better than Jordan.
I was letting everyone know in that suite. Mm-hmm. Michael Jordan, if he was here, Michael would have put on a show for me.
And then what happened once you left?
And then I was on the subway, and Nick was like, I told you.
LeBron did this.
And I got home just in time for LeBron as he assists someone and scores another bucket as they come back and beat the Knicks.
Right in his cancer's face after talking all that trash. That was a fun game. But here's the thing that I think people need to adjust, and this is Kobe, this is Magic, this is everybody. I'm going to use a video game analogy in honor of our great statistician, Dusty. LeBron's ability to take over games,
please make it Pac-Man.
It is not a turbo boost that you can only press the button 3 times. It's like, oh, now it's March, we're out of it. Like, it is a replenishable resource. You should go to it as often as you can. As long as it is not isolation ball, that is, which is not what he's going to do, that is going to deprive his teammates of opportunities to shoot the ball, he's not going to wear out. He's not going to, we're not going to get to May and be like, man, he's tired.
But at some point, it will not be a replenishable resource.
Well, let's, you know what? Let's worry about that when problem. You get to let's not borrow yeah. worry. Let's worry about that problem when we start to see any evidence of that problem.
Sure.
One other thing that should be noted, since November 1st, the Lakers defense allowing 99 points per 100 possessions. That would be the best mark in the entire NBA over the course of the mm-hmm. season. Since November 1st, after that rough October, that plan they had of LeBron will be an offense unto himself. Let's bring in athletic, young, potentially good defenders. That is something that is working for them.
And you have to give Magic Johnson credit. People didn't see that. When he said that initially, we're going to be a lot tougher. And we're going to be a better defensive team. You're starting to see that, Nick. Great stat there since November 1st.
All right, we're going to take a break. Stick with basketball. Kevin Durant weighs in on the King a little bit later. And then coming up next is the NFC East on the line this Sunday. Next, this is First Things First. Welcome back. We'll get to the Cowboys in just a second. But first, a couple of big plays from last night presented by Geico. A little Duke basketball, CC. Zion with the pass off the backboard to R.J. Barrett.
Man, give it up for the Cameron Crazy. Imagine if you're a Duke student.
Yeah.
Coach K don't even care no more. I'm not the Olympic coach. I'm allowing these guys to play like the Globetrotters.
Yeah.
Imagine how cool that'd be to be in school to watch these kids play.
It's like being involved.
You going to come with me? I think it's February 23rd. See, Duke at Syracuse, Carrier Dome, courtside. You in?
Yep.
No,
I'll
I'm not going
there.
To Syracuse.
Oh,
man.
Come on, man.
I'm not going up there.
I'm having my naming ceremony and everything. Come on, see?
On to the Bucks and Pistons.
What are they doing for you?
They're naming a studio after me, bro. Come on.
Giannis doing some mean things to Blake Griffin.
Oh, man. Giannis got an upper body like Jenna now. I mean, that's a compliment. I'm trying to pay you a compliment, Jenna.
Well, this is the thing. Giannis, in the last few years, Jenna, you'll appreciate this. He's really put on some good size, but more importantly, strength. You can see the muscle definition. You can see his body has totally changed. And the ability to be able to do this, he couldn't do that the last couple years.
I think that's what you said. If he can just get stronger, he'll get it.
Right. I mean, I'm not worried about his jump shot.
If he can be more committed to his workout regimen like Jenna.
Oh!
There you go. Lakers,
Spurs. I see your red bone.
Lonzo using LeBron's pick goes straight to the rim.
This is rare from Lonzo. Why? Jumped off 1 foot, see? Not many one-footed dunks from Lonzo. He's a two-footed jumper. Finally jumped off 1 foot. Boomed on some folks. It's a good play by him.
Yeah, great play by him. Great play by Alonzo. Very, very aggressive. And some of the things he's got to do now, he can't just settle for that three. He's got to start taking it to the hole more. Ooh.
Last but not least, Ben Simmons showing off the court vision. Nice bounce pass to Jimmy Butler for the layup.
One of the few highlights that the Sixers had last night.
Man, it's tough to beat the Raptors in Toronto, man.
That Kawhi looks good. Don't anyone want to say nothing. Old Kawhi's back healthy. Don't nobody want to say nothing. Don't nobody want to have no Kawhi highlights.
What do you mean?
Oh, Kawhi's a bad guy. Forced his way out of San Antonio. Kawhi is a beast.
We're talking Kawhi in literally 15 minutes.
Look how we just got a Kawhi segment in there.
Yeah.
Big slate of games on the NFL schedule this weekend, but in the NFC East, none bigger than Cowboys-Eagles battle for division supremacy. They played back in Week 11, Cowboys winning 27-20. The time, Zeke had 186 yards from scrimmage in that one. That was the first win in Dallas's four-game win streak they are currently on. And Ezekiel Elliott says the team's mindset hasn't changed since then.
Just making sure we had that same mentality. I mean, honestly, we're in the same position that we were when we were 3-5. You know, we need to go out here and win the rest of these ball games so we can have a chance to, make a run in this playoff. So, I mean, just having that same mentality, just attacking work the same every day and just getting ready to play on Sunday.
All right, CC, if the Cowboys are going to beat the Eagles, what's going to be the key for them to do so?
Jenna, I've been studying the Cowboys, and I've really come up with something that I think is really cutting edge. I hope the Cowboys are listening. Get a ball to damn Zeke.
Feed him.
All right, let's get the game started that way. The path to the Cowboys and their victory happens to be a lot through Zeke, but what I'm really looking for is I want to see if we can build on. I want to see if Jerry Jones says this team has turned the corner. I want to build on that defense. Because if that defense brings that same energy, the offense does not have to be spectacular. If they can be as dominant against what we consider to be one of the most balanced, one of the most lethal offenses in the New Orleans Saints, that to me is the table setter for the Cowboys for these last four games. It should be established on defense, on their physicality, turning people over, being very, very aggressive, and utilizing the youth, utilizing that speed and energy to be able to dominate the month of December. That's the way I'm going to start. Yeah, it's easy to say, oh, let me hand it to Zeke. We know we can't win without that, but that defense, and from an offensive standpoint, I'm going to lean a little more on the wide receiver.
Yes.
As you can start to see, the last month, they're starting to make more and more big plays. You can start to see when they get one-on-one on the outside, they throw a number of comeback routes to be able to hurt the defense. But ultimately, Nick, I'm back to where I was on the start of the season. I need four big plays out of them of over 20 yards in their passing game, Jenna, and that's going to make me happy.
And if you're going to do that against any defense, why not do it against this Eagles defense with such a light secondary right now, with one you can really pick apart?
26th ranked pass defense, and that's over the course of the year. It's even been worse as of late as the injuries have mounted up for Philadelphia. And that is, I know how good Zeke is, and at this point, I feel like the world knows how good this Cowboys defense is. What the next step for Dallas, and I don't know if this is the game to take it. I would love to see them try to do it because this is their most important game of the year. This is the swing game in the division. If the Cowboys win this game, it is very difficult to see any way Philadelphia can recover and come back and win the division. Conversely, if Philly wins this game, they have the tiebreaker with Dallas. They'll be tied in the standings, and Dallas all of a sudden will be on the outside looking in. But the Cowboys' passing offense is averaging on the year exactly 200 net yards passing a game. And by why I say net yards is they're averaging 227 yards passing. They're averaging 27 yards of sacks given up a game. Mm-hmm. So you're only gaining 200 yards through your passing attack per game. That is frightfully low. That is, in 2018, bottom 4 or 5 in the league as far as what your actual production is. Part of that's on Dak. Part of that, though, is on the fact that they have given up the third most sacks of any team in football. That Dak has been sacked 45 times this year. A lot of that's been the loss of Travis Frederick. Some of it's been Dak holding on to the ball too long. But that's where Philly could ruin the game for him. Mm-hmm. Is if Philly gets pressure up the middle, Fletcher Cox, who I feel like continues to be one of the league's more underrated players, if he takes advantage of the backup center, if he takes advantage of Xavier Suofilo, the guy who replaced Connor Williams at left guard, that's the way Philadelphia, I believe, can win this game if they are going to, is get pressure on Dak. We know that he'll fumble the ball. That's something he's had issues with as of late, is ball security, because otherwise, I don't trust Philadelphia's offense anymore. I don't. They got Zach Ertz. And Carson Wentz still really good, but aside from that, I haven't seen enough from him in the running game.
And we've only seen one game with Golden Tate actually showing a little bit of...
Yeah. Watch for Golden Tate. He did emerge in the last game after being there a month. And also watch for Darren Sproles. Both of these guys, Sproles scores. He hadn't scored and played a significant role since week number one. So both of these guys being added to the lineup. But that Philadelphia defense, I'm concerned about. Fletcher Cox, yes, they do have some matchups on the interior that would concern football fans. But what I'm concerned of Philly defense. Jordan Hicks not being there as a middle linebacker. You can believe Ezekiel Elliott is going to find his way not only into that second level of that defense, but find some open running room that he can make some big runs against that Philly defense.
Something you brought up yesterday that was so interesting was how hyped up this Dallas team was to play the Saints. Then you said, hey, this is just as big, if not more important, for this
game.
Dallas team. If you're Jason Garrett, if you're Jerry Jones, if you're the captain, if you're the leader in that locker room, how do you get these guys hyped up a second time and say, we love what you did last week, now go do the exact same thing?
I learned this from one of the great Cowboys. The guy's been my good friend for a long, long time. Mike Irvin says, same intensity. Same intensity. You're only playing one game every 6 or 7 days. Every once in a while you have a Thursday game. You should be able to appropriate the same energy, the same enthusiasm, because you know something? The game plan, outside of taking them out of the running game, it should be the exact same. They should start to come up with, this is how we're going. We talk about their offense all the time. But how they went after the Saints defensively, that's what we're trying to duplicate by power and by force. Those two edge rushers, Randy Gregory, line your butt up onside. Yeah. All right? linebackers running from sideline to sideline, hitting everything moving, and we know that a secondary has become dependable, slipping in between man and zone. That's the way the Cowboys, it's nice to talk about. Dak, Amari Cooper, trade the number one pick for him. We know Zeke's going to always get some attention, but if the Dallas Cowboys are a real, real threat, their defense is going to have to be a top five defense, and they are more than capable of doing that, gentlemen.
Let me ask you one question about the way the schedule fell. Dallas played Thursday. Philly played Monday. So Dallas has almost double the time to prep for this game, even though neither one's coming off a bye. Does that matter at all in your eyes?
Well, it matters a little bit. It's just a matter of what do the guys do with the time. At this point in the season, everyone's body is somewhat tired. But it's a matter of not how tired my body is, how tired is your mind? Can you still focus in on studying those four games? Do you utilize that time as extra time that your body is going to recover? Dallas Cowboys are too young to be tired, man. Now, if I was thinking about the time, I'd be more concerned about the Philly team. Mm-hmm. Has more veteran players. And when you have more veteran players, they have to be able to get more rest for their bodies to recover. So when I look at it, I would say that would be an advantage to the Dallas Cowboys and to the youth that they have on that roster.
All right, now time for your Subway Choice moment. Thursday Night Football on Fox tonight. Marcus Mariota and the Titans looking to stay in the playoff race. They host the Jaguars. Jags coming off a shutout win against the Colts. Nick Wright, what do you think the key is in this one?
I want to see if that – listen, the Jags obviously have nothing to play for this season except for pride and potentially Doug Marrone's job. I want to see if that defense can, over the last quarter of the season, get back to who they were last year. They're not going to get back to the AFC Championship game, not going to get back to the playoffs, but they just had a dominant performance against a Colts team, C, that was playing great football. Winners of five in a row through the passing game, most notably, and they shut them out. And for the Titans, Titans are one of these half-dozen teams at 6-6. In the AFC, a game out of the playoffs that still have a lot to play for.
To me, I never believe in football that there's nothing to lose because any game you can get hurt. But also this roster to Jacksonville, Tom Coughlin might change this whole roster. It's very important. These veteran players, they finish this season strong. Important game, they try to duplicate what they did against the Colts.
All right, that's Thursday Night Football tonight on Fox. Coming up here, should the Chiefs be on upset alert at home? That's next on First Things First. Why am I screaming? I'm not sure. Back here, First Things First, that guy, three-time yes. Super Bowl champ Mark Schlereth is with us. Stink,
how are
great
you?
To have you.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Before you guys head out to call your game to Sunday.
We're yes. partnering for the weekend.
Today?
Great
yeah.
Dick Stockton.
Absolutely. Little Cleveland, Carolina.
Mm-hmm. Looking forward to it.
Yeah.
It's going to be fun. All right, let's talk some other things first.
I'm looking forward to see what Cam got on. Cam Packett, man. Bring
God,
something
I hope
special.
You say something to him.
Mm-hmm. And don't even have to bring your shirt this time, just like last
well,
week.
Well, just the same thing. So the Chiefs, arguably the best team in football, just barely beat the Raiders last week, arguably the worst team in football. Still a win is a win. And now Kansas City looks ahead to Sunday, where they'll host Lamar Jackson and the Ravens. Ravens have won their last three, but still 7-point underdogs in this one. Mark, what do the Ravens have to do if they are going to pull off an upset?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. You know, defensively, when you look at the Kansas City Chiefs, they will get you side to side, east and west. it's so complex looking, but it's really simple. But they'll use the jet sweep, they'll use the motion, they'll use the screen game to soften you up. The thing about Andy Reid is he'll run three or four formations, and out of every formation, he'll have five or six plays that are adjunct plays to one another. So right. one's a smash mouth play, right. one's a screen to this side, one's a screen to this side, one's a play action that you go deep over the top, and one's an underneath
and
throw.
And it's great planning because you only have five plays, but when you mash
right.
them all together, in a small, it's easier for guys to learn. Because the concepts are all the same. It's when I'm in this spot, I'm this guy. When I'm in this spot, right. I'm this guy. And it's very, very hard for defenders, as Bart Scott says, for their eyes to be disciplined. Because you see all these things going this way.
Right.
And then next thing you know, they're doing something coming this way at you.
Right, exactly. And so when you have that system, you're running the same exact play. There's really only two guys adjusting. right? There's the primary that's really making an adjustment, and then there's the quarterback understanding, you know, the play action or whatever he's running. So I really think it comes down to this. When you play Kansas City, defensively, you can take advantage of them. They're the worst team in the league as far as defending the pass. They struggle defending the run as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're not very good on the defensive side of the ball. They've had their issues there. It really comes down to you look at the Ravens. They're number two in the league as far as time of possession is concerned. And defensively, they're number three in the league as far as forcing three and outs. And that's really going to be the thing. Can you eliminate, let's call it three possessions. If an average game is about 12 to 13 possessions, can you get them down to 9 or 10 possessions on the mm-hmm. offensive side of the ball? By playing that game, by possessing the ball, by running it, by setting up the play action,
yes.
by using Jackson as a run threat, mm-hmm. And using him in that form and extending drives. If you can do that, then Kansas City's beatable. But if you do this and you play this really well, then you have a chance to beat Kansas City because they're a damn good offensive football team.
Yeah.
I mean, damn good.
Yeah, you got to slow them down. Nick, we talked a couple years ago about the Warriors and the Cavs, and not to this degree, but I want to use this example because you can't let the Warriors play the type of game where they're going to get up and down the court, score 115, 120. When the Cavs were successful, those games were in the 90s.
Yep.
Now, if Baltimore's going to be successful, they got to convert on third down. The same thing that we saw Thursday night ago with the Saints. You got to build, man, that time possession, you better have it 33 minutes because if they get around 29 minutes Kansas City, they're going to score 35 points.
Well, right. That's we're yet to see it. The closest anyone's come to slowing down the Chiefs offense is the Denver game where they were terrible in the first half on Monday Night Football, I think it was, in Denver. And then Mahomes and the Chiefs had that great second half comeback. But what I know.
By the way, that great second half comeback, almost entirely on off-schedule plays.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Like,
like Patrick Mahomes is moving around. Yeah. So there's a lot of, like, Denver played them as well as they could be played, and Patrick Mahomes went in Superman mode. You know, he went crazy.
Account for.
Right.
And that's what makes Kansas City even more dangerous than, say, someone like Tom Brady, because Tom Brady's not going to do anything off schedule. Drew Brees is going to do very little.
Well, wait a minute. If Tom Brady just ran for 1,000 yards.
Oh, yeah, and they stopped the game. Yeah. He was like, didn't move him this way.
And you saw it in 19 years.
The kneel down? Yeah. You saw what he did in the kneel down, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
At the end of the game, instead of going backyard, went forward because he didn't want to go beneath the 1,000 yards.
Tell me guys aren't
career.
Petty.
Right.
All right, but so here's the thing about the Ravens that people need to understand. Since Lamar took over, I've never In this era of the NFL, I can't remember a team, maybe Tebow's Broncos, that are running offense like this. First game, Lamar was the starter. 53 rushes, 267 yards. Next game, 43 rushes, 242 yards. Next game, 49 for 207. They have just removed the forward pass from their offense. They are trusting an excellent defense, a defense that has been great from the start of the year. They had a small moment in the middle of the year where they softened a bit. Now they're back to being great. And just say, we're just going to run it right at you. And I know the numbers say the Chiefs run defense better than their pass defense. I actually, having watched every game, disagree with that. I think teams are abandoning the run because the Chiefs are up so much.
Sure.
But I think teams can run on Kansas City. Yeah. I thought they might have been in the market for the player, the Snacks Harrison, when he was on the market, that I thought they would be on the market for a player like that to try to shore up their interior defensive line because you can run on Kansas City.
Why would you change that formula if it's working? Why would you change that if defenses so far haven't stopped you? Maybe a one-dimensional offense is the only way that you're going to beat the Chiefs.
Jenna, it's great, but the only thing about Baltimore, Nick, great numbers, great rushing attempts of 53, 43, 49. Mm-hmm. Only way they got a chance is if they roll out Cincinnati's defense. Because we didn't mention that that's who they were going against. Oakland's defense, all right? Atlanta's defense, all right? Kansas City's defense is bad. It's still better than their defense. And they got the advantage of having their offense to be able to fight for them. These other teams, they struggle defensively, and their offenses aren't explosive. So when you get in these games, you get on shows like this, and it's all nice and patient. And then you get out there and you feel Kansas City's speed and you start to get anxiety and you start to rush. And then you know something? Next thing you know, they got Lamar Jackson dropping back. They done forgot the game plan. Right. And he's trying to throw the football. So you got to be able to keep your patience. Just like Dallas won that game 13-10. Man, this is not about drawing pretty pictures. This is about trying to get the job done, trying to stay on the field for Baltimore's offense, and I just don't believe they'll be able to do it because Kansas City is going to put too much pressure on them, and Lamar is going to ultimately have to throw the ball, and there's a reason why they don't have him throwing.
Right, yeah, and you brought up that Dallas game. You know, at what point would you ever say, okay, Dallas is going to play the New Orleans Saints, and the Saints are going to have 7 sacks on Dak Prescott. What's the score going to be?
And the Saints are going to win the turnover battle.
Right.
And Dallas is going to have a terrible penalty on a punt.
Right. And it's 13-10.
Yep.
I mean, and that goes to your point about patience, about sticking to the game plan. And if you drop down by a touchdown, you get to the point where you're dropping back, and that's not how they're going to win. They're going to win with that quarterback running the play action and running the football, and then obviously, you know, doing what they do as an offense, running the ball. That's what it comes down to.
I'm very excited to see number 15, Pat Mahomes, in this game. He's been the best player in my eyes in the NFL this year. They are playing the number one scoring defense, number one yard defense, number three rush defense, number two pass defense, number three third down defense. Baltimore's defense has been thoroughly dominant in all phases except for forcing turnovers. He does not have Kareem Hunt. They do not have any margin of error as far as getting home field. They don't even have margin of error as far as winning their division. I want to see in a game where the only way the Chiefs are going to be able to move the ball against a great defense is through the right arm of number 15, how they do. This is one of the bigger games Pat Mahomes has played in his young career. I believe he's going to come through. I'm very excited to watch.
One thing, Lamar Jackson, be careful. The surface in Kansas City, very, very slick. The patchy grass can be slick. The footing's not good. Lamar Jackson, put your long cleats on, all right? Don't be out there trying to, with them little molded bottoms. No, put your long cleats on, and this is going to be one of those throwback games. It's going to be cold out there. Like, Lamar, this is going to be a different environment.
What's the weather like in Kansas City?
Oh, right now, I'm looking for it Sunday at kickoff. It's going to be about 35.
Oh.
Wind coming out the southwest.
You made the wind thing up. That ain't on that app. You made that up.
Okay. All right. If you need a fill in, that's what I do.
Mark, stick around. Got to take a break. Speaking of the Chiefs, find out who thinks they're still not on the Patriots level. Next on First Things First. In just 2 days, the MLS Cup will be lifted in front of one of the most electric crowds in all of sports as Atlanta United take on the Portland Timbers Saturday, 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific. On Fox or watch anywhere on the Fox Sports app.
Credit to the Portland Timbers. They beat my beloved Sporting KC to get to this round. I think they'll probably win the championship.
Last time I went to Portland, I was doing something out there with Nike. I was walking downtown and it seemed like everyone was on some timber. It smelled like timber downtown.
The old Pacific Northwest.
Whoa!
With us for stories to start your morning. LeBron James scored 42 last night in the Lakers' comeback win over the Spurs. The Kings scored 20 of those 42 in the fourth quarter. Nick, how impressive was LeBron last night?
Well, in the fourth quarter in particular, he checks in with 10 minutes left in the fourth. Lakers down 8. From that moment forward, they scored 38 in the final 10 minutes. LeBron had a direct hand in 34 of those 38 points. His shot was falling. Everyone's shot was falling in the fourth quarter. And the Spurs had beat him twice previously this season. This was a good win.
Yeah, I didn't think anybody wanted to play with him.
It's toxic.
Can I tell you what I play with? I just stand over there.
You go get some rebound stink.
I just stand out and shoot threes.
Moving on to a guy who didn't want to be LeBron's teammate, Paul George. He had 47 points, 47, including the game winner in the Thunder's win over the Nets. Paul George, 25 in the fourth quarter. Woo. OKC now 16-7 and second in the West. Nick, how impressive has George, Russ, and the Thunder been?
Paul George averaging his career high in points, rebounds, assists, steals, blocks. That's everything. They were down 18 going into the fourth. He brought them back. He was great. This was an excellent win in Brooklyn.
The most important thing with this, they had a huge comeback. But in the critical situation, Russell Westbrook and him, twice they did like a dribble exchange where they were acting like they were getting ready to set a pick. And Russ being, you think Russ is going to shoot it? Russ ended up passing to Paul George. Paul George hits the game winner. That's not something that Russ should do. So you're talking about two guys, superstars, being very, very comfortable. Good basketball game last night.
All right, to the NFL now. Broncos wideout Emmanuel Sanders is out for the season with what Denver believes is a torn Achilles. Sanders leads Denver in catches, receptions, and receiving yards. Stink, this is just a big blow for the Broncos.
A huge blow for the Broncos. He is so good off the ball. like getting his release off the ball. Mm-hmm. You cannot touch him. He blows by people. He's been in the slot. He's been outside. He's running the tough routes in the mm-hmm. middle. He is small, but he is fast, and he is tough, and he is by far their best wide receiver. This really hurts their playoff push. They've got a great favorable schedule, but this is a big-time loss for them.
Yeah, and something, it's a strange injury. Wide receivers typically don't tear their Achilles, especially in practice. Now, we've had two wide receivers, Dez Bryant and Emmanuel Sanders, both of them tear their Achilles. Both of them in the latter stage of their career. I believe this will alter if they are ever to be good enough players. Like Emmanuel Sanders, I believe he'll be back in the league, but will he be a number one? Dez Bryant, will he ever be able to get back into shape after the significant injuries? Very, very strange wide receivers, two of them injured in practice.
All right, finally back to the NFL now. Cam Newton and the Panthers have lost four straight. Cam Newton said he was playing the best football of his career and then promptly threw four picks against Tampa. Panthers visiting the Browns trying to halt their slide. Cam, though, is making no excuses.
At the end of the day, I just know, I'm healthy enough to play. And, I'm not going to let nothing hold me back from being able to, help my team. And I don't definitely want to be a liability. I just want to make sure that, I'm putting myself and this team in the best situation to win football games.
All right, you're saying all the right things. Mm-hmm. CC, Mark, you're both calling this game this weekend. Mark, I'll start with you. What do you think the key is in this one?
Well, I mean, the key, you look at the way Norv Turner has operated that offense. Christian McCaffrey has just been out of this world. Out of this world good. They've gone to him and said, you know what, he's big enough, he's strong enough, he's good enough between the tackles to be our full-time every down back. We're going to give the ball to him. They are so, you watch them on offense and the way they set themselves up with all the motion, with all the option stuff,
on
with the read
surface,
zone.
They look very similar to the Rams. They look very similar to Kansas City. But just not getting the productivity that we're seeing. But on the surface, like when you look at them before they start to play, very, very similar.
Yeah, and they have, I mean, their ability to create runs because of what Cam Newton does. And I'm telling you, that dude is an absolute beast. And they've done a great job of setting up the play action stuff for him. Last week was an anomaly. It was an outlier because he has played really well, and he's thrown the ball better than I've seen him throw the ball with better completion percentage than he has ever had. And a lot of that goes to the way they're operating their offense. But they are another one of those teams, like you said, Kansas City, like the Rams, the illusion of complexity where they get you playing on your heels because you're looking at so many different motions and ghost motions, and then you've got to play option off of that. And ultimately, all they want to do is run it down your throat. And they've done a great job with that.
So, go ahead.
Cam Newton, I believe, is going through what a lot of us as players go through. And after you get into the regular season, you're never healthy. And Stink, I've never been around a player, him and Jim McMahon, who've had the type of injuries and the type of surgeries that they've had. So both of these guys have understood how I'm going to play, how I'm going to maintain going through the season. Cam had shoulder surgery a couple years ago. Now, he's not practicing a lot during the week. They say that's the new normal, where he's taking some time off. But because this defense is not your typical Ron Rivera-type defense, and it's not what Cam Newton is used to, what I start to see in the film is Cam, and I say that Cam's footwork is better than ever. His accuracy is better. His bad throws aren't as bad as they used to be. He's playing the best press conference. He's doing a better job than he's ever done.
You think he's doing better at everything except dressing? You got an issue with the dressing?
Well, yeah, but he probably thinks he's doing better. So, he probably thinks it's a win. And Nick does, so that's a loss. If Nick thinks it, that's a loss. But what I'm seeing is you start to press. You don't have the same defense. So you start to kind of force the ball. And that's what I've seen against Tampa. Mm-hmm. They're playing zone. He's got a slant reach, slant flat. This slant over here is wide open. He decides to go to the more difficult one. They pick him. And Tampa Bay is a defense that's been getting gutted by everyone. So I could see him being very, very aggressive going into this, but trying to manage his health, not being able to practice. So sometimes in the game, you're not necessarily as sharp. And that's what I saw last week. It wasn't like the three games before that, so I'm not going to be overly concerned. But Cam, he's got to be understanding to realize this is not the Carolina Panthers when I was the MVP. They're going to give up some points. I can't turn the ball over, and I can't take these type of chances because our defense and our team won't be able to recover.
The interceptions he threw were almost, at least three of them, were just horrible decisions, and one was just a fine decision but a terrible throw.
Yeah, I thought he was colorblind. He was throwing it right to him.
I mean, but the thing where I saw this week, and he's limited it in the practice with the shoulder, what I did see watching the game, but you guys tell me if you're seeing it as well, some of those throws to the sideline that he usually zips in there were not getting there the way I was. It seemed to me watching the game, not on the interceptions. I'm not blaming the interceptions at all on an injury, but on some of the other throws that he wasn't at 100%. When you've watched the film leading up to you guys calling the game, are you seeing something similar?
Yeah. Normally that dude can absolutely rip it. And you're seeing more layered throws. You're seeing more throws with anticipation. The thing about that is when you're not practicing, as you mentioned, you know, and the speed of practice is not what it needs to be, you tend to, when you're starting to throw with anticipation and layered throws and doing those things, I mean, you've got to be so sharp. And so with a lack of practice time and obviously his shoulder is bothering him. I mean, everybody's shoulder's bothering him. Yeah, but that's where you are in the NFL right now. But when you start to lose that fastball, it takes work, it takes practice, it takes understanding of how to get around when you don't have what you've always had, what you've always been able to rely on. And that's part of the maturation process of growing older in this league and still playing at a really high level. And that's what he's going through. And that's legitimate, and it's hard, you know? And so, especially when you've always relied on that. I mean, that body is
ridiculous. And when you wake up and you're Superman, it's hard to realize you wake up and feel like
You ate kryptonite for breakfast, you know? And all of a sudden,
Super Bowl reference.
Yeah, it's kind of dumb.
But. All right, let's talk some Patriots now. You could doubt the receiving core. You could have questions about their quarterback.
You can wonder
how they'll beat the high-scoring teams. But that being said, Patriots are 9-3. They are at the top of the AFC East, and now Pro Football Focus believes they're actually at the top of their entire conference as well. PFF says the Pats are ahead of the Chiefs, ahead of the Chargers, and ahead of the Steelers in the AFC. Stink, what do you think? You buying the Pats as the best team in the AFC right now?
Look, from a talent standpoint, when you put the talent to the talent, no. No, they're not. I mean, when you look at the Chiefs or you look at maybe even the Chargers or you look at some of these other teams, from a talent standpoint, are they the best team in the AFC? No, they're not. They just aren't. They're probably middle of the road in every offensive category and every defensive category. They're somewhere between 11 and 21 in just about everything, I would imagine. But what they are the best at is they are the best at game planning from week to week to attack your weaknesses and to expose you that way. They've got the smartest and probably best quarterback on the planet, and they've got the best head coach on the planet. And you cannot take that out of the equation. When you start to evaluate teams, you have to evaluate their ability to adjust, their ability to game plan, and their ability to handcuff you and take away what you do best. And that's the New England Patriots, and that's what they've been for the last 18 years.
Yeah, I got a lot of respect for PFF and how they do things, but sometimes in this business, and Mark and I are very, very fortunate, like we've seen this movie a lot, so it becomes, I can kind of predict what the end is going to be. So I think they got a lot of respect for Kansas City, but I think that they think they can predict, and it's more dependable, what New England's going to do compared to what Kansas City's going to do in the limelight. We know New England. Man, if you're going to beat them, you better beat them in September. You better beat them in October, because come November and December, and don't even let that try to be at home. PFF must think that New England's going to get home field advantage. They feel Kansas City's going to slip coming down the stretch. And we know, because right now, if we flip the records, and if New England has the if they have the best record, we would automatically think that this, PFF, absolutely, they got this right.
Right.
But now with them having the second best record, I don't believe PFF feels like New England's going to have to go to Kansas City.
Because if they do, I do not think they can win that game. I shouldn't say they can. I don't think they will win that game. Obviously, you can win anywhere in this league. We got to be honest about what we've seen so far this year. If all we had seen in football was this year, this would not be a debate. The Chiefs have lost two games. One game to New England, where it's tied with 1 second left, and they lose on a field goal. One game to the Rams, where they have a lead with 2 minutes, with 2.5 minutes left, and they lose by a field goal, right? So that, those are their losses. The Pats, on the other hand, have gotten in their three losses, they have been blown out by mediocre teams. The Chiefs right now, here's the full list of teams that have scored more points per game in a season than the 2018 Kansas City Chiefs. The 2013 Broncos, and that's the list. They are the second highest scoring team in the history of pro football, and they have a quarterback that is playing, and it's not, I want to channel Coach Mangini, but it's not unfair to say he is playing at an unprecedented level. And so the Chiefs are better. Now, do I think Pat Mahomes and the Chiefs can go to Foxborough in January? I don't think so. I don't think they're going to have to, but the Chiefs are the better football team.
But maybe it's the Patriots are the most complete team. Maybe it's that the Patriots are the team you can poke the fewest holes in as a whole. Because each of those other teams, the Steelers, their defense hasn't been playing great. They're down a running back. The Chiefs, their defense hasn't been playing great. Well, here's a team that maybe it's not at the top, but is the strongest of the almost at the top teams.
Yeah, I mean, we don't live in a world, like Nick said, where we hadn't seen no more football. Because, matter of fact, if we hadn't seen no more, I wouldn't be on the show. You wouldn't be able to be on the show. Show. But the truth of the matter is, if we saw no more football, this is what we would question. Kansas City's defense, 27th in points. Kansas City's defense, 31st in yards. Kansas City's defense, 22nd against the rush. Kansas City, last against the pass.
Right. Yep.
Red zone, oh, they're 29th. So regardless of what we would be saying about Kansas City, oh, the quarterback special, oh, they doing this, all that, we had never seen a team win a Super Bowl with a defense that bad. So that will still be part of the story. So now we have seen 18 years of Belichick and Brady. And coupled with that defense is still the same. I believe more in New England. They're far more predictable. And let's just do this. Say if it's a close game in the fourth quarter, who are you dependent on? Who can take a gut shot? Who can take one right on the chin? Tom Brady can. We know Belichick can.
Right.
Can Kansas City? We cannot appropriate that type of belief for an organization that has not been good in the playoffs and has been awful at home.
With a quarterback who's never been to the playoffs.
Well, that's all baked in there. That's all baked in there. So, yes, it'd be nice if we had never seen no football. But I've been fortunate. I've been alive long enough to see Tom Brady's career and Bill Belichick's career. So I'm going on the thing that I can rely on, the absolute best.
I think the other thing is you talked about all those defensive numbers, and they're not a very good defense. But now we take away five explosives a game because you lost your running back. And you just can't factor that team and look at that team and not make that one of the factors that you evaluate.
You made it a lot easier for Bill Belichick to be able to concentrate on Tyreek Hill and Kelce. Yeah. Because they are going to force. If we're at AFC Championship, they're going to force Spencer Ware to be a superstar. Yeah. They are going to dare him to be a superstar. That we know. What's Kansas City going to do defensively? They're still depending on Eric Berry, who's got an Achilles. Yeah, like that's their last saving grace is Eric Berry coming
back. Here's one thing Kansas City can say that no other team in the league can say. They're yet to have a bad game. They've lost twice, but in one, the Rams and the Patriots games, I don't think anyone can say they played poorly.
I was on a team like that, 98.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was on a team like that.
No doubt.
And we ain't got no hardware. This is my wedding ring. I ain't got nothing, man.
And by the way, I have not any time this year said, mark it down, the Chiefs are going to win the Super Bowl. I'm not saying that. What I am saying is I understand why all benefit of the doubt would go to the Patriots, all history, all the faith goes to the Patriots. In this season, the best team in the AFC has been New England. We'll see if it still looks like that in January. But as December 5th, as we sit here today, I think it's December 5th, they've been the best team in the
Kansas
AFC.
City's been
Kansas
the best
City.
Team.
Kansas City.
Not New England.
I misspoke. Yes, Kansas City's been the best team. I misspoke. Thank you.
I was like,
we're having a tremendous influence on you.
I just said, wow.
I got shaken because I didn't know what day it was.
Mark,
I felt
stick
like
around. I knew that was coming. I was trying to get to the teams.
What day is it?
December
6th.
Wednesday.
That was close.
Thursday. Coming up, will the Cowboys take control of the NFC East on Sunday next? First things first. Back here with Mark Schlereth, it is time for Say What? Mark Sanchez will get his first start for Washington this weekend against the Giants, but no matter where he goes, one play will follow him forever. Say what?
Of the things associated in fans' minds when Mark Sanchez's name comes up, there are good things, high draft pick.
Sure.
The playoff runs with the Jets those 2 years to the AFC title game. There's also a certain fumble in the nationally televised game that...
I'm not following.
God, I got that awkward feeling just listening to that. Like the cringe.
When you're the reporter and they're like, when you go to the press conference, ask about the.
But you don't have to ask about that.
And you try to find a way.
You always empathize with these reporters.
Hey, let me tell you guys something. Y'all know what Mark Sanchez was doing a month ago?
What?
He had no press conference. He didn't have a job. He should be glad somebody even asking him a question.
There you go.
He's lucky to be starting in the league.
There
he's
you
good
go.
Enough to be starting. They can ask some intimate questions. Man, he should be sit up there and don't say, give me the appropriate answer to. Man, that.
I do sympathize.
He's so sorry.
What? Since 2014, or 2016?
2016. Last week,
they said he hadn't thrown a touchdown since 2016. I said, I watched him in practice when he was with the Broncos. He threw a bunch of the defense every day.
All right, let's talk some Cowboys and Eagles. Battle for NFC East supremacy. They played back in week 11 with the Cowboys winning that one 27-20. At the time, Zeke had 886 yards from scrimmage. That was the first win in Dallas's four-game win streak, and Zeke says the team's mindset hasn't changed since then.
Just making sure we had that same mentality. I mean, honestly, we're in the same position that we were when we were 3-5. You know, we need to go out here and win the rest of these ball games so we can have a chance to, make a run in this playoff. So, I mean, just having that same mentality, just attacking work the same every day and just getting ready to play on Sunday.
All right, Mark, let's break this down. What is going to be the key for the Cowboys to get past the Eagles?
Well, I mean, you look at the Cowboys, and I always talk about the identity of a football team and how important it is to establish an identity. And, you know, you look at just their four-game win streak, 4 sacks, 2 sacks given up, 4 sacks given up, 7 sacks given up to the Saints. And in that, now, there was a couple of fumbles in there, but in that, not one interception. Can you imagine giving up 4 sacks, giving up, I mean, you're talking 11, 15, what, 17 sacks in the last 4 games? I just did that math in my head. I'm pretty impressed. 17 sacks in the last 4 games, and you haven't thrown a pick? I mean, ball security, that is the number one job you have as a quarterback is ball security, to have that kind of duress. Now, some of it, breakdowns offensive line, some of it, breakdowns in protection with the tight ends and the running backs. Dak Prescott will just hold it a little bit longer. But to possess the ball at the end of the day, because we know we can control the line of scrimmage, we know we can run the ball, and we know our front seven is going to make plays.
Dallas Cowboys won't lose if they punt stink.
Yeah, no. Every game ends in a kick, whether it's a field goal, whether it's an extra point. Yeah, every possession.
Yes.
Field goal. Yeah, I mean, that's what they need, and that's what they're doing right now. Just don't turn the ball over and control line of scrimmage. That's their formula.
Can they be patient? Last week we talked about teams who even struggled in the first half. Jenna was like, but they came out and they kept that same game plan the second half. I'm concerned about two things. Can they establish what they did against New Orleans?
Right.
And I want them to do it with the same amount of energy. They are a young football team. And it's very seldom that you're able to have where the predominant players, especially the star players, are all young. I haven't been on a team where all the star players were young. You always typically have a mix. Guys typically got 1 or 2 years left. Mm-hmm. Guys right in the prime of their career, and you always have a hot shot. Couple guys really starting to emerge. Man, Dallas, most of their key players, man, they're young. They should have
really
the energy.
Young.
They should be able to run up and down there. They should be able to play with that type of energy. Some of those teams you went on in Washington, the way they were made up, man, them teams are old, man. You're barely trying to make it through practice. But when you're on a team like Dallas, man, I can get that energy going every week. You've been in the league 3 or 4 years. Oh, man, you only got 16 games. So I expect, especially at home, they should be able to duplicate that. Let's keep the same philosophy, but I need 4 big plays on the outside. Michael Gallup, Amari Cooper. I don't care if they throw it to you 3. I don't care if they throw it to you 33. I need big plays to result in gains of over 20 yards because that's going to take that pressure off of Zeke and also give that that defense just enough big plays where they won't be playing the field position game the whole game.
If the defense plays the way it did against New Orleans every game the rest of the way, it'll be hard for the Cowboys to lose. Flip side, if the offense plays the way it did against New Orleans the rest of the way, it'll be hard for the Cowboys to win.
Great point.
Like, is very – 13-10 does not really exist in this league. I know it did, and last week we saw even worse. We saw a 6-0 Jags Colts slobber knocker. But those are – that. And so as good as the defense has to feel in this extended week watching film of that game, we got after him here, we short field, we defended here – the offense can't feel great watching the film from this week, watching what was left on the table, mm-hmm. watching the fact that they only had one touchdown drive in that football game. Like, that's got to concern them to a degree, because while the Saints defense is good, it is not great. It is not a dominant defense. And Zeke played well. And Amari Cooper made a couple plays. Like, they have to find a way to break through, particularly in the red zone, do the Cowboys offense, if this four-game winning streak is going to turn into a five-game winning streak. And if it doesn't, if this four-game winning streak ends here and Philly wins, Philly, all of a sudden, for all the turmoil for the defending champs, they are in full control of that division if they win Sunday.
Right, but if Dallas is going to break out and have this great offensive game, isn't the Eagles' defense the team that you're going to be able to do it against, think?
Well, you would think, but again, what do we say? 17 sacks in the last four games? I know Fletcher Cox can rush the pass. I know they've got players.
So the strongest part of their team doesn't really match up with what they're doing. That's kind of the conflict.
That's the conflict. I think going back to their defense, let's stay with the offense first. So one of the things, having this 10-day layoff, right, they played on Thursday.
Right. Mm-hmm. Eagles played Monday.
Right. Having this layoff, you know, you think what an advantage that is. You get healthy. As an offense, oftentimes you get a little rusty. When you're not playing every week, you get, like, the timing is off. So it's going to be important for them to come in there, establish themselves, not only running the ball, I think more importantly, a couple of swing passes, a couple of bubble screens.
Get some rhythm.
Just get a little rhythm going, and then get your offense back on track, get yourself rolling as an offense that can run the ball, run some of the zone read stuff, give some of the play action stuff off of that. Yeah. Then ultimately, to me, the difference between Philadelphia this year, obviously defense notwithstanding, because their secondary has been atrocious, okay, and injured across the board. But I think the biggest thing is the explosives by the quarterback, because he's coming off an ACL and he hasn't had those explosive runs. He hasn't had those things that have kept drives alive.
The third long where he shakes off a sack, right, rolls out, downfield.
Either throws downfield or takes off and runs and converts a first down. Carson Wentz is not doing that this year because of that injury, because of a lack of, off an ACL, man, it takes time to get to the point where you're comfortable doing that. And they have not gotten those plays consistently, which they did last year a ton.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.